Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Give me a cowbell.
More cowbell, baby. More cowbell. Woo! Oh, I feel good!
Yeah!
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
I can't believe I've been doing this show for like 10 years and that we've never done this before.
I know. Here we are, dude, right? Seems long overdue.
I know. It seems long overdue, but it's huge news right now, just to jump right into it, man. A billion streams of Last Resort. That is absolutely unbelievable to have that number.
That blows me away, man. It really does, man. It's like kicking it off with that, right? That's like a bam. That's just it's a club, man. You know, we made it in. It's like we made an impression on pop culture with a track like Last Resort that really just infected the masses. And it's like, I'm just so grateful because it just keeps connecting in just a real and authentic way. I mean, really and truly, it's like it just spans generations now, and kids, young people can identify, and it could be a song you could jam to, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like you could just jam out to it and just get pumped up to it, right? Or you can dive deeper in it. You know, have you heard that one that Ronnie Radke from Falling in Reverse did the reimagination of Last Resort?
No, I haven't heard it. No, I know Ronnie well, though, but I haven't heard his reimagination.
Don't sleep on it, man. It's like, I got to tell you, it's like his version cuts to the heart of the lyric.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like it expresses what the lyric is saying, the music is. And he just connects the dots so well on that version. And it's really cool. It's good, man. It keeps rearing its head. We did a thing with that kid, Jairus Johnson, too, a reloaded mm-hmm. thing for the song. So we've celebrated it multiple times. So thank you for shining a light on that.
Well, it's amazing to me because like you said, you mentioned it's part of pop culture fabric in this, you know, in this generation and the previous. Well, you're looking at like, you know, Don't Stop Believing or
yes.
I don't know, Jump or something yes. like that. It's like, it's right in there in that category, man.
My word. Hey, I'll go with that.
Yeah, go with that one. It's funny. What do you remember? You got your own sound effects even. I need a horn. Wah, wah. What do you remember about writing that song? And of course, it's the eternal question. Did you know you had something special when you were putting it together? Because this is very early on in your career. It's 20, almost 25 years old now at this point.
Yeah. So it was the original form of it was Tobin was playing it on his piano at his mother's house. We were there and I think we were like stealing vodka from his mom's little booze tray and playing piano and thinking we were cool. And he started playing that thing. And I was just like, what's that? That is because it almost reminded me of like when you play it on piano, like a Fugees line. Remember Fugees?
Of course.
It reminded me of something like that. And then when you put it, we were like, we got to bring that in the rehearsal spot. So we brought it into the rehearsal spot. Jerry started playing it on guitar. And then, you know, we're laying the groove down and we all look at each other and we're like, oh, dang, this is a vibe. This is like, it's got that gangster swagger to it with something that's like, ah, there's fire in it. And I remember our manager sitting at, coming at the end of rehearsal and we were riffing it. And he called, he's all, that's what I call a noodle right there. That's a noodle, guys. This thing you're doing, that's noodling. And you keep doing that. And I remember it was so special. I didn't have the right lyric for it. And then there was another song we had worked on at the same time, but it had the lyrics, the intro, cut my life into pieces, you know, the intro part.
Mm-hmm.
That was on another song. And I was like, what if I flip it on this one and then just see if the band can, if it jives and they fit on each other. And it was like, And when we did that, we were all like, hold on, we onto something now.
It's funny. When you hear that guitar part, it always reminded me a little bit of Hallowed Be Thy Name, Iron Maiden.
Everybody says that.
Yeah, right.
That's why I tell the true story. And it's trippy because we kind of got flack for that for a while. And I'll be honest, at the time, I wasn't a Maiden fan. It kind of like went over my head. I was like, right. Poison, Guns N' Roses, Fugazi, Deftones. That was like my arc, right? And so they kind of went over my head until I was an adult and we were compared to them. And then we started doing festival sites. Like, oh, this is sick. And I could totally hear it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's all that like Baroque, you know, that those chord progressions from like the Baroque era and that symphonic era.
Yeah.
That influenced that power metal, you know what I mean? Which then it's like, it sounds the same. And I was like, all right, that's dope. Like we got reference to something not even intentionally. It opened us up to a mass though, because metalheads were like, oh, hold on, this is sick. Zoltan
from Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or Brian from A7X.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I taught that riff to, I can't even count how many kids I taught that riff to. Because he was a guitar teacher. You know what I mean? And so these cats were like, yeah.
But like you mentioned, you didn't even realize it, but that was kind of the appeal when that song came out. Because I am a Maiden fan. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. Kind of incorporating, you know, obviously it's not a ripoff, but it's got a little bit of a guitar part you can hook yourself into. Because there was still, at the time, it was more of a, you mentioned Deftones, more of a Deftones type feel, a little bit rappy. But the guitar part kind of opened the door to more of the metal side as well.
Oh, yeah, dude. And that like, which was a prelude to us years later going out on tour with Iron Maiden in Europe. It was Mastodon, Papa Roach, Iron Maiden. And I was like, I got to tell you, I was so nervous because I'm like, all right, Mastodon's like this freaking crazy wild metal band. We're this kind of like metal band that at the time, maybe we were releasing Scars or no, we were releasing, here's the story. So we're all nervous, right? We're getting ready to go play with Iron Maiden. We're the band right before them. Mastodon just rips it. We open up with To Be Loved, right? So To Be Loved was the theme song for Monday Night Raw for quite some time.
That's right.
And so that was like, that opened us up to a whole broad fan base, right? When we were in that pop culture moment with that song, it was like, ooh, it was hot. Well, we go out, we open the song with Maiden, and the crowd just is singing along and going crazy. And I'm going, the band's looking at each other like, this wasn't, I didn't expect this. What is happening? Right? Like, in the show. And we, like, continue. We had a great show. Like, they gave us 45 minutes maybe on the deck, and we just bashed it, right? We played Blood Brothers, some of the old school stuff, you know, that smash your stuff, yourself in the face vibe, you know? And I got off stage, and I was talking to a couple people after the show. I'm like, I just was very surprised as to how this crowd really took to us. And, they were like, oh, well, in Germany, the metalheads, we love WWE Raw. And that is the theme song. And like, so a lot of German metalheads also love wrestling. That culture is alive there. And so that was like a through line for us into that culture. It was just trippy how those things work out, right?
Sure.
And it went over really well, you know, and our drummer Tony Palermo got to beat one of his idols, you know what I mean? And Nico, and like, it was a vibe.
Yeah, it's intimidating. We've opened for Iron Maiden before too, and it's one of those things where Iron Maiden crowds, they want to see Iron Maiden, so it is a little bit intimidating to go do that task.
We did it with Guns N' Roses too, man, and we actually got a compliment from Axl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man, he gave us a compliment, and it was after our show in Puerto Rico. We did a performance there, and we bust into Scars in Spanish, and the place was killing it. And there was an overall vibe at the Guns N' Roses shows. We were rocking the crowd. You know, and really and truly what Axl was saying to us, he's like, hey guys, like, it's not often that a band comes through and really rocks our crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you guys. Shout out to you guys. You rock. You know, and it was like, it was a cool way to end up the tour with them. And those are, daunting tasks to step into those spaces. But you know what? P-Ropes, let's go. Strap them up. Let's ride. Let's go. You know, I've been cooped up.
But that's what you got to do. And it's interesting, too, that's cool for those bands to have a Papa Roach opening for them, because it's still rock and roll, but it's a little bit of a different style, a little bit of a different generation. But once again, you got to challenge them as much as they're challenging you.
Yeah. And we're seeing the new generation of bands.
you right. and I.
We're seeing what's this new wave of rock and metal that's coming up. Beartooth, Bad Omens, Bring Me the Horizon. I'll start with B's. That's true. And that whole next wave of music that's coming in. So it's like,
yeah. Well, because you know, for Fozzy too, you know, we're coming up on our 25th anniversary, and you guys are as well. It's like we've become kind of the newer, especially you with all the number one hits you've had. But it's like you're now becoming classic rock.
Exactly, bro. I look this good, and I'm classic rock, baby. Stop playing.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's funny because I was looking at the charts today. We have a song that just hit the top 10. You guys have a song that's in the top 10. But it's like Linkin Park, Pearl Jam, Papa Roach, Disturbed. It's like all of these bands from, you know, 20 years ago still at the top.
Dude, congrats on the top 10, dude.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, man.
We're grateful for what we've been able to maintain out in this rock climate and rock world and rock fellowship, rock spirit, rock culture. You know, it's a hard thing we do out here, right? So it is. It's a grind, but it's a joyous grind for me because it's purpose driven. You know what I mean? This music, it really means something to us. It's not like we're just getting in and trying to write throwaway music. I want to write music that really just moves people, touches people, moves me. You know what I mean? Like just and being vulnerable in the music is powerful. And I think that's been one of the threads that's been able to connect us really deeply with our fan base.
Well, and you have once again, because you with all the, I mean, all the number one songs you have and the top five songs that you have. I mean, you are, you know, a radio band now to where whatever you put out goes right to the top just because it's Papa Roach.
I'm hearing what you're saying, and it's really and truly it's blowing me away right now because on our album Ego Trip, the one we released I think about a year and a half ago, we've had four number ones on this album.
That's incredible.
And that's crazy. And you know, it's like we've had and sometimes it's like the game and rock in a way. It almost seems like right now it's like you run it up to number one and it just goes away. It's like a faster kind of rise and fall of a song. Whereas the way that we wrapped up this campaign with Leave a Light On, we got to stick around on the number one for like 3 weeks. And that was a statement for us, you know, like a nice way to go out as an independent endeavor, right? With New Noise Records, releasing Ego Trip and doing that. It's like quite an accomplishment. And I'm like so proud of my team, everybody, my collaborators, my management, my brothers in the band, the people who do the art, like everybody. It's just been like we've built this family now of creative people that we're all pushing towards this goal. My social media team, you know what I mean? Like I got all this. What I love about it is I've been able to surround myself in just like-minded creative people, right? Mm-hmm. And when you get in a room and you're coming up with these ideas for marketing and stuff like that, it gets exciting. It's like, all right, cool. Now we're like, the song is starting to move. We just cracked into the top 20 at alternative radio. We haven't done that with a song in like 15 years. We've kind of been exiled from the format just because of the style change over there. And that's okay, you know, but we have a song that kind of crosses over. So now it's moving over there and we're like, oh wow, that's kind of cool. But really the song, it's the depth of the song that I think is doing the work. And we're partnered with a charity, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And we started raising money last year and we're like creeping up on 200K.
That's great.
Donations of, you know, our funds, P. Roach, you know what I'm saying? Like we're donating straight to them and they do such a good work, a great work for the people, you know, in the bereavement of people dealing with suicide. And also the care for people that are struggling with suicide ideation. And, you know, you can dial up 988, right? It's I say it's that easy, but it's not that easy sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh, letting your wall down and really going, yo, I need help. But it's letting people know that that service is available to them at any moment, at any day, with no judgment upon you, only looking for the welfare of you and the love and care and service to you. And that's what I want to be part of. And that's the movement of the song, mm-hmm. you know, Leave a Light On. And I think that's what's that's what's making the move for us right now, is this music that's purpose driven, that is, that we're just so passionate about as a creative group of pop, as Papa Roach, you know.
How did you get involved with the suicide prevention group? Is this something that was close to the heart of the band, or?
Absolutely. I mean, from the beginning, right? Last Resort was a cry for help. It was a song about my best friend. You know, I saw my best friend go through this downward spiral. I wrote the song in first person, right? But the song is about my best friend when I was like 18, tried to kill himself multiple times over, and it was just horrific. And we lived together.
Right.
And it was very traumatic. The beauty in the story is that he survived. He found God and he's on his path, right? That's the beauty of the story that people don't know, right? That's the end to the story. But I've had my battles with mental health way back. I really had some deep, deep struggles back in like 2004 and 2010, 11. Those were like 2010 and 11 were very, very dark times for me. Mm-hmm. But I came through, you know, and I got my life right. I put the bottle down finally. That was a real big part for me, you know. But in the story of that, right, like in Leave a Light On, I had dudes reaching out going, hey, man, if you need the help or what, we got you. No matter what, we got you. We're here for you. And that's, mm-hmm. I've lived both sides of the story of Leave a Light On, right? Where I've been able to be there for somebody through their darkest hour, or somebody's been with me through one of my darkest hours, you know? And I think that lived experience in music and putting that message out there, that saying, hey, no matter what, like, I got you. I got your back. I'm here. Mm-hmm. I get boys going away to college, right? Living in the world, going in and living life. And it's like, I wrote that for them, you know, really and truly.
Was it hard to kick the bottle, as you mentioned, while you're still on the road? Did you have to take off the road to do that?
Dude, that was like from 2004 to 2012. It was an 8-year battle back and forth. 2 years sober, off the wagon, 6 weeks sober, off the wagon for a week, back on for 3 months, back off for a month. Back, you know, it was just a tug of war for so long. And then it got really bad in 10 and 11. And then finally in 12, I just was like, I'm done. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't, you know, and it just was a real hard struggle being out there on the road. It's like easy to fall into that stuff, you know, and until I finally was just like, all right, enough. Like, I can't take it anymore.
Well, like you said too, when you're on the road, there's so much time to kill, you know what I mean? And you get into the habit of like, I got nothing to do, I'll just have a drink after the show, you know?
Hey bro, it's a fast forward button. Let's not fool ourselves. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a fast forward button out there. It really does. And that part of it, like, I had to fill it up with, all right, let me get on my bicycle and just go be Freddie Mercury out there. Bicycle and go see Europe, you know? Covert, you know, throw on a cowboy hat, you know, so nobody noticed me. I'd be like, bicycle, bicycle. You know what I'm saying? I'm just out here doing my thing, Chris. I'm just doing it.
He's got props, cowbells and cowboy hats and everything, which fits because you're from Vacaville, which of course is Spanish for cow. You're from Cowville.
I'm from Cowtown, man. Straight up. For real, no lie. If anybody can claim it, I can. That's where the band came up. You know, it's like on a Saturday night, you can go out cow tipping.
You really can too. I've driven through there many times.
Well, we did. Yeah, dude. And another thing I did just growing up in Vacaville that was kind of funny is I lived by this big old hill, and it had no trees on it or anything. It was completely clear, and it just had weeds growing on it. And you get cardboard and you go down this
thing. Oh, nice.
It ripped. And this thing was literally like 150 yards long. Like, it went from the top, it just so yeah, man. I was on some like country boys living type shit, you know, no shoes.
I've been doing this podcast, like I said, for over 10 years. I've never discussed cow tipping. Tell us exactly how that works. I've seen it in Tommy Boy, but I've never actually done it.
That's at night. That's at night when they're, and they, some of them stand up, they're stand up sleeping, and you and your friend, you just roll up on it. And sometimes it's like on, they're like kind of on this a little, because they'll dig in these little, like the paths, like paths to go up hills will be like sideways, and they'll dig them in the ground. So they'll be standing on that. So you can get on the high side of them, and just you and your friend, you're like, two, three, and it just, yeah, it's so cool, dude. I just got canceled right now. PETA's coming. Dude, no cow died. Okay, the cow got up, just fell over on its side.
It's probably like, what the fuck you doing, man? Why are you waking me up?
Hey, man, it was like, got back up.
Oh my gosh, the stuff that you do when you're kids, right? Well, I grew up in Winnipeg. We used to just walk around in minus 30 weather with a stolen bottle of vodka and pass it back and forth and then go home.
Wearing a dress jersey.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know it, dude. I know. I had an old merch guy that ran with us for quite some time from Winnipeg. He got me a Jets jersey with my last name on it.
Oh, right on. Right on.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started reading about you guys in like Metal Edge magazine or whatever it was, you had a different name for a while. It was like Kobe Dick. Yeah, Kobe, man. Dick. With a name like Jacoby Shaddix is one of the coolest rock names ever. You changed it to Kobe Dick. What was the reason for that?
So, you know, my friends, they all called me Kobe for short, right? And I had my girlfriend at the time, she was my fiance at the time, who's my wife. I've been married to her for 26 years. She co-signed for this big old 15-passenger, big old white van for us to put our equipment in and go do our little weekend warrior runs. And we called it Moby Dick. My nickname was Kobe. Then I became Kobe Dick. This was my thing. I was like, ooh. Who got the dick, Kobe Dick, Moby Dick? You know what I'm saying? And so we get that thing and just go hit the shows and do that. And that's how I just kind of had this kind of grimy, like a little more street kind of attitude because, you know, at the time I'm like, I'm promoting my band with flyers and I got a boom box and I'm at shows and I'm like, you're doing this shit face to face. You had to have this charisma, this swagger to do it. Like, how did you not have enough attitude to pull up on the line going to wait to watch Korn to have your own boombox selling your shit for $5 to the people? Papa Roach, $5. Papa Roach, $5. And I, you know, I'm like, they're like, who is this guy? I'm like, Kobe Dick, what's up? At your service. Papa Roach, $5. Check it out. Bam. And I'm playing the music and I'm like,
wow.
You know, and that was the spirit of me. So the name fit, you know, and it was like, then I had a little Johnny Vodka swagger for a while. And that's when I was running with like Jamie from Hatebreed and Corey from Slipknot. And, you know, we were Ozfested out just sideways, you know, hanging out with Sid, burning myself with cigarettes, just being crazy. You know, like Sid's looking at me like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know. I just ran amok for a while. I got crazy out there. So Kobe Dick really fit. I lived up to it. I was like, I had this internal desire to like self-destroy in a weird way. In this like self-anarchistic view of myself, it was really like an extension of just fear in my life. And then I was like, after the first record, the band was very in a point where we were like, all right, the spotlight's on us. Oh my God, like the pressure's too much. Like, we want to be just a real rock band. How do we prove ourselves? How do we shed this shell a little, you know, not just be the broken homeboys? Because that's like Spin dubbed us the cover of the magazine. It just called us Broken Homeboys. And it was like, I get it. It's a good tagline, but it's kind of like a little disrespectful.
Right, right.
You know? And, you know, so there came, I realized like, my name is dope. Like, all right, I'm going to change my name to Kobe Shaddix. That's my name. Let's go. You know, I'm going to become a father, you know, and that kind of came around too. And I didn't want to have my kid be like, different last name than me.
Sure, sure.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Who are I'm stepdad? No, I'm his dad. You know, so that hints all that, you know, and thank you, man. Thanks for the compliments. And shout out to my parents for being creative, you know.
right.
They were hippies. They had very interesting life, man. They had a very interesting vision on what life could be, and where it actually ended up was kind of tragic, but you know, they had an interesting vision on the world, and I was born into that.
When you mentioned that you're walking the line of at the Korn show and promoting the band, like, where is that? Like, obviously Vacaville is kind of in between San Francisco and Los Angeles. Which way did you go?
We're going to Oakland. We're going to San Francisco. We're going to Sacramento.
You know, gotcha. I mean,
Korn came and did like an autograph signing down at Tower Records. Literally, I live like probably about 8 minutes down the road from it now. The Tower Records, and that's where I would go. I went and boomboxed their line to go to their autograph signing and their show in Oakland. And Limp Bizkit, too. I did theirs. I remember I went and I was like backstage at the Limp Bizkit show. I never met Fred before. And I walked up to him and I grabbed his Kangol off his head. And I was like, oh, what's that rat? And dropped it back on his head. And he's like, who's this guy? And I'm like, hey, what's up, Kobe Dick? He wrote, you know, just like, I was kooky like that. I kind of like was very like a little over the line, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what it took to get to be recognized in the underground scene. Like, I was a character on the reel. Like, I was a dude that would come out on stage back in the day, like before we were signed, to have a painting and then like cut a hole out and put my head through it and come out on stage and just be like, I am art. You know, just like, I would get weird. It was fun, like discovering who I was as an artist when I was younger.
See, but that's what people want to see. Sometimes it's misconstrued as like, as being, you know, having a big head and being, you know, having a big ego or whatever it may be, but it's confidence. You know, it's like, we wanted to be fucking Eddie, you know, we wanted to be Mick Jagger or David Lee Roth or Freddie Mercury or Bruce Dickinson. Like, that's who we wanted to be as a frontman. So you got to have that charisma and that character. But sometimes people take it as at first as if like, this guy's too much, man.
Yeah. I think it's if you're a little too much, it works for us.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Like that we're busting at the seams. It's like, there's too much here. I need to share.
But that's what people want to see. They want to see a larger than life performer, you know, the party host on stage for sure.
Absolutely, man. I mean, it's like, watch that like on Queen when they did Wembley Stadium.
Live Aid?
No.
After
he was wearing all white.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's the next tour after that. Yeah.
He was wearing all white and it was just, he had the tassels around his arms and he was, that was in my opinion, the performance of a lifetime. I watched that thing many times over and it was just like a dude in his prime.
Yeah.
If he made a stadium feel like a club, you know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
Wow.
I've watched the Live Aid gig probably 50 times. It's one of my favorite gigs of all time.
I gotta go watch Live Aid then. I gotta get into it.
It's 20 minutes long and it's just body blow, body blow, body blow, headshot, get the fuck out of here. And there's one point where he's standing there and he just turns around and bends over in front of the crowd for no reason. Freddie's just bending over. Yeah, man. But that's kind of, so what was kind of the first big break for you guys when, you know, now you're got your Ghetto Blaster and your, you know, Kobe Dick, $5 and all that stuff. What kind of was the first step to get to the next level?
The first step to the next level was we were sending our stuff to like Century Media Records.
Yeah. We started
Napalm, Blast, I think it was like all these like metal ones and then Roadrunner, Warner Brothers, and we really got a lot of feedback in the process. Oh, it's not this. What's the image of the band? You know, we didn't have any.
Right.
We're just rocking Dickies. And then Tobin, our bass player, stole a Johnny Cash cassette on a trip to LA one time, and we heard The Man in Black for the first time. We all looked at each other like, that's it. Black Dickies. It's on. Let's go. You know?
Right.
And so that was our image, right? So then we had an image, and we were going down to Hollywood playing free Monday nights at the Troubadour. And then also doing shows at the Roxy and the Whiskey. There was another one, Viper Room. But free Monday nights at the Troubadour was really our spot. And then we got some interest from Warner Brothers and a guy named Jeffrey Weiss. He signed us to a demo deal. And we went in with Jay Baumgartner. And we recorded Last Resort, Broken Home, Infest, She Loves Me Not, and I think Dead Cell. And then in the process of doing that, he got fired. So then I'm like, almost there. We were almost Warner Brothers. Like, I felt like we had the songs. And then this guy, Ron Handler, once we got passed on, came down to the studio. We were mixing the songs because we were like, we're going to mix these and we're going to release these because these ain't going to sit around. This is hot.
Mm-hmm.
And we got signed to DreamWorks. It was at San Luis Obispo. I remember sitting, we played this place called Slow Brew. And we were standing around and this guy, Ron Handler, and my wife, she's sitting there with me. The band's all huddled around. Our management's here. And it was on the verbal, you know, and on the handshake right there. He's like, guys, like, I really want to sign you guys. Like, if you will accept this offer, like, I really, really want to work with you guys. This is, I just feel like we could really do something great with you guys. And we all stood there in that circle and we're just like, oh, our minds are blown. And then, you know, contracts came along and they were good contracts. And there we went. Off to the races, bro.
Off to the races. What? It's interesting though, you know, the way things have changed, you know, in the last 25 years or so. You mentioned that you put out the new record, Ego Trip, on your own. You said independently. Is this your own label or kind of what?
This is our label that we use artist services through ADA, which is an arm of Warner.
Okay.
And so they have a promotions department, a radio department, media, you know, social media marketing. We have our own social media marketing and radio on our side. So we combine our teams together and build a bigger vision. That's how we get the work done. And we do that domestically and internationally. And it's been great for us, honestly. It really has. And now we're looking like, all right, well, maybe we're going to go sign some bands. Like, I'm looking for some new talent. Really, that's what we're looking for, too. And so that's an exciting part of the piece of the puzzle that we will navigate into as, you know, we build and grow this thing. And also, you know, P. Roach, we're writing new music. And so it's just a real good creative time right now.
It's interesting how people consume music now with, you can use a record label, you can be independent, you can stream, you can go on radio. I mean, there's so many ways to get your music out there in this day and age.
Yes, absolutely, man. And I think all those lanes are just so important. You know, it's like, I was talking with Brent from Shinedown and he's like, you know what radio has been able to, radio does that the internet doesn't right now. And he's like, radio's built legends. And I was like, yeah, it did, man. It really did. You know, the legends of Led Zeppelin.
Sure.
All of that, you know, and we're kind of on the tail end of that, you know, because I mean, rock radio is still going to be a thing. You know what I'm saying? But it's like the new ways that people consume. Now people are going into the VR world and I'm just like, oh God, where's this thing going?
Right.
Come back. Come over here. Right over here. The sun, it's shining. Look. Can you not see? I don't know.
But that's the truth, though. If you talk to Matt from Avenged, I mean, they're all into the NFTs and the virtual reality world and yeah, all that sort of cyberspace music.
I would really like to sit with Matt and have a rap with him on that. I think it would, mm-hmm, you know, they've always kind of had their own vibe and done their own thing and been innovative, even with their style and sound and look. And so I'm interested to see what they're doing. You know, it's so foreign to me right now. I'll just be straight, right? It's this, the whole world and the other thing. I don't even know what is the verse.
The cyberverse. I don't even know
what it is. Yeah, I don't know.
But the thing with rock radio, though, like I never realized how important rock radio still is until we started getting played on rock radio. I mean, it's massive.
Telling you, dude.
So huge for the band, for all of us to get that play and those spins.
It's been such a great part of our career, you know, having these partners and people that have believed in us and given us a shot, even in eras of our career where we weren't so hot and, you know, but we still had a shot to get on those formats and do that and put our music out there and tour. And we've seen our business diminish at times, and we've seen our, you know, what we've done as a band and the influence of our music flourish, you know. And it's like right now it feels like it's, we're on rock in general is on the come up. It's like,
yeah,
getting bigger and more exciting, more experimental, funner, and the culture around it is building, which is rad. Kids are playing guitar and bass and drums. My little 10-year-old, he's just obsessed about playing the drums in that back garage out there. His little bud's playing guitar. they got a bunch of other kids playing guitar and bass at the School of Rock. It's like there's this underbelly of it. I see from my perspective going, cool, man, there's a, my kids are feeling it.
Do your kids like Papa Roach? Do they think it's cool what you do, or are you just dad?
Absolutely. They love the band, and they dig what we do really and truly. And they've been honest with me at times. They're like, oh, that's like, it's cool, but it wasn't my favorite. You know, I'm like, that's cool. Like, not everything I do is my favorite.
Right.
You know, I get to the end of it, and I'm like, oh, it was like an era. It was a time. Like, I can move on and do something else. And, you know, that's like, I think that's as an artist, right? That's how you do it. You just keep evolving and keep pushing and pressing. And you got new goals and new ideas and new visions, and go get them. You know, when my kids they're inspired on their own. You know, my boy Jagger, my second born, he's 19, playing college football in Hastings, Nebraska. It's an NAIA school. He's playing running back. It's his sophomore year next year, but he's been playing drums since he was a little guy. Loves to play metal, but also loves to play hip hop and also raps, right? And so he's just been, for the last 4 or 5 years, writing raps. He's like, Dad, check this one out. And he's good. He's dope. My son is like, he's on that like era where I'm like, oh, because I remember when I was 19 and that's when I started to get like, oh, I'm starting to have a thing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that was like, I'm seeing that happen with my son. And I'm like, oh gosh. But he's got such a better head on his shoulders than I did, I think. And so we'll see how that goes down. But he loves what he's doing and where he's at in his life. And he digs my music, and he's a musician himself. You know, my boy Brixton, he thinks I'm awesome. My oldest boy, Mikhail, he's always liking to talk about it because we've, you know, since he was a little baby coming out on the road.
You mentioned before that the band has gone through high moments and lower moments. What do you do when you feel that the band's at a lower moment? How do you build back up again?
I think it's just tenacity and just going out there and just keep taking another swing at it.
Mm.
That's been the thing for us, to just keep pressing and pushing creatively and trying to convey your message. And then also, you know, sometimes it's just hard. It's like balancing all these things going on in our lives and trying to be present at home, but then also be a rock star and do that. And, you know, maybe it got harder at times for me than others. And so I, you know, maybe wasn't all the way present in one space or the other all the time. And maybe that's why, you know. And so I think it's the tenacity, man. And also just trying new ideas, creatively marketing. You know, I think for us, when social media came around, we really kind of latched onto that, and we had people around us encouraging that. Because I was the last, I was like, man, I don't want to have a Facebook page. I don't want to have a friggin' MySpace page. I don't. And the band had one, and I was like, y'all could run it. That's cool. Like, come talk to me and I'll send my messages to the people. That's dope. Let's go. And then I got into it, you know. Then I got a Facebook page. I was like, oh my gosh, all my friends from high school are on here. What? Right. I'm like, have a high school reunion like in a week. I'm like, hey, tripping out, you know?
Yeah.
But then that social media, man, that really did help us like convey the message of our music clearly to our fans and really just go straight direct and just have this conversation that we've built into something that's like very integral to how we market our music and how we connect with our fans and how we just kind of poke our head through the fabric of creativity and music and art and commerce that's going on out there. Like, how do you do that? Social media has been a great tool for us. And so, you know, we're doing like top fives, you know, top five records that we love, or top five things that you would do in a Rolling Stone magazine, or, you know, questions that you would be asked from a thing. We're just bringing them to life on our social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, we are our own Rolling Stone. Maybe not as cool as Rolling Stone, but is Rolling Stone cool anymore? I mean, is anything cool anymore? I don't know. I mean, is my coolometer broken? Does it break at some point in your life? I don't know, Chris. Like, these are things I think about in my room when I'm alone by myself, Chris. You know what I'm saying?
Dude's got more props than Carrot Top over here, man. It's great.
It's real. I swear to you, these are not props. These are not. Okay, can I explain these things?
Please. You got the sunglasses, the blue blockers.
I went on vacation. I was in Belize, right? I was in Belize and I just needed some coverage. So I was like, let's just get these. They're like kind of like, but then I was like, they're kind of like the lawyer guy, the diamond guy, this guy, that guy, whose guy, your guy. So, and then the cowbell literally is, I go see my kids play sports and I forgot to bring my main cowbell. And so I had to go to Thiessen's in Iowa and go get three of these. And it's just sitting on my desk because I'm packing up to go to my next trip. So I can't forget this. And then, shit, what else? I mean, I got all these ones. Oh, I got all these ones because I don't know where I'm going.
Strip club.
No, nope, this is gambling with the boys. But it could be used at a – this could definitely be used at a gentleman's club. You know, I could be real, man. I cannot remember the last gentleman's club I've been in. And I've been to some, you know what I'm saying? I used to go back to 2000. It was like, ooh, let's get booked. Me and my wife, we'd go to them together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's been a long time. This is actually, you know what I'll do with this right here? I'll take and all these ones, I'll divvy them up. Like we'll be backstage with some friends. I'll divvy them up. So it's like Monopoly money. And we'll do a CeeLo. We'll roll CeeLo. So we're rolling dice, you know?
Stuff you do to keep amusing the road. Yeah,
the cowbell is just a natural prop that's just in it. But I think it's a good one. I think I need to start doing Foley for my own interviews.
It's good, man. Yeah, do your own Foley. I think it's great. Be like a shock, wacky morning show DJ who has all of his own props and gimmicks there for everything.
No, totally. Oh,
the cowboy hat.
Cowboy hat.
With that, yeah.
This is my son, Brixton.
Let's talk about Ozfest. You mentioned earlier in the interview that you did Ozfest and all that sort of thing. That was a huge deal back in the early 2000s, especially for bands like yourself and Disturbed and bands, you know, System of a Down that were on the rise. How important was Ozfest for you guys to be involved with, and how many years did you do them?
We did it once, and it was sick as f- I think the reason we weren't asked back to do it again is because I incited a riot in New Jersey at the big old amphitheater out there, and we tore the place apart, and I got arrested.
Wow.
I tried to evade the cops. It was a whole thing. Like, I jumped in the trunk of my A&R's town car after we got off stage and evaded, left, and they got a hold of him and said, New Jersey State Police said, if you don't bring yourself back, you have to bring yourself back and surrender yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, dude, so I got arrested, blah, blah, blah. Dealt with that, was banned from the venue for a long time. But dude, Sharon Osbourne just chewed my ass out.
Oh, I can only imagine. She's terrifying.
The cops were like trying to get pictures and shit, and Sharon was like, ah! Rightfully. And she chewed me up, spit me out, handed me my own ass, right? And I needed it. I just needed that like reality check of like, yo, she's like, dude, you're in your prime and this kind of behavior is gonna fuck it all up for you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And she just read me the riot act and was, you know, pretty much like, you and you're welcome, boy.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? And after a few days, you know, it simmers down, and I went back and chatted with her, and I'm like, you know what? Thank you. Like, I needed that kind of check.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And after that, you didn't hear about my band doing crazy shit to people, and you know what I mean? Because I was like, Sharon's like, yeah, you mind your P's and Q's. And I was like, oh shit. And that's kind of when I like got checked, I think. And so I don't think I was asked back because of that. But
you needed
that's
that.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, bad blood.
No, but you need, I remember we were, I was hanging,
good lesson.
I was hanging out with Zach at one of the San Antonio or something, and we were playing baseball, and I threw a pitch and he hit. You know, of course, Zach carries a baseball glove and a bat with him on the road. So I threw a pitch at him. He hit it, and it went over the fence into the parking lot. And it was like, home run. And we're all like, yay. And then, of course, here comes Sharon. You idiot. You know, if this ball hits someone on the head, we can lose the whole festival. And we're just like, oh, my gosh. We're just terrified of Sharon. But she's right. Like, she has to deal with all of us. You know, and Ozzy as well, but you know, juvenile idiots.
Yeah, and she's got and the venue people going, why is your tour tearing up my venue?
Right.
So it was like, I, I finally was welcomed back. I'm not banned from there anymore, which is great.
But you know, now that you obviously you're a business owner as well. You own the business of Papa Roach with the other guys, so you can kind of see it more from Sharon's side of the coin. Of like, yeah, man, that probably cost a lot of money and a lot of bad publicity for Ozfest. Doesn't matter if it's Papa Roach or whoever it is. It's Ozfest.
Oh, it cost me a lot. A lot of money.
Wow. Were they throwing the chairs in the air and stuff?
Chairs, sprinkler systems out of the ground. Ooh. Like it was insane. Mud, sod, tons of sod, the whole lawn, chairs, trash cans, trash, everything. It was just like berserk. It was like the height of chaos in Papa Roach land. It was exciting. It was so fun.
Was there a time when you're like, uh-oh, we've gone too far here? Or were you just digging it as a delinquent?
Right when I came off stage, I was like, I'm thinking, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Like, I can't hang around here. When I'm coming off stage, I was the first thing in my mind going, get me out of here. I got to go. Yeah. I was on some like just full chaos and disruption.
Did you have any interactions with Ozzy himself at all?
Yeah, a couple times. Came off. We played a show and it was just in the pouring rain. Kansas City, not Bonner Springs, but another one kind of in that area out there. And he's side stage and he's just getting drenched and he's just hanging out watching us. And I'm like, yes. I'm like, come off stage. And he's like, hey, great job. You know, comes up to me, gives me the this and the that, and he's drenched. And I'm like, dude, this is cool, dude. Like, you came out here and got wet with us.
Right, right, right.
That's dope. Like, that was cool. That was a real cool moment.
As we start to wind down, you mentioned before that your son raps. When you first started with Papa Roach, you did a lot of rapping, kind of that rap rock. You know, you mentioned Deftones and Korn, and you kind of moved on from that. Was that a conscious decision? Was it just a product of the times of doing that type of vocal delivery?
Absolutely, man. I wanted to prove myself as a valid rock singer. You know, that was a big goal for me through my career. And I think, you know, throughout the career, I've been able to do that, you know, and now it's like, even on some of our newer stuff, I'll throw raps on it. We got a song called Killing Time on Ego Trip that, dude, is the sickest raps I've written. Go check it out. It's like, I am spitting straight up. And so I still stay sharp, you know, and I dig that part about music. I still love that music. You know, will I put music out like that? Nah, not necessarily, but I'm a fan, you know, and sometimes I'll flex on it here and there, but for me, it's just that melody. I could tell it. I just feel like with my voice and what we do with Papa Roach, it's like melodically is the coolest way to deliver what I'm trying to convey, where I feel like I grab somebody by the strings, you know, like in their heart, you know, like that. To me, that's what moves me the most right now. That and a little bit of screaming, you know what I'm saying? Just I like getting down on some screaming, too. Just don't want to tear my voice apart.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. As you get more into it, you have to worry about your voice and the longevity and you know, still got to do, you know, 4 gigs a week or whatever it may be.
Yep. I'm on that like 3 on, 1 off, 2 on, 1 off, 2 on, 1 off, 2 on, 1 off, 3 on, 1 off, 1 on, 1 off. Kind of that where it's no more than 3 ever. And there's not a lot of 3 in a rows in a row, you know, more like on the 2 in a row and then a 3 in a row here and there. That works well for me. That's a good touring vibe.
You guys had did some great business with Falling in Reverse, touring with them. So talk about that, because I talked to Ronnie about it, and he was super excited about going out with Papa Roach, and you guys did a bunch of legs of this tour, and he's the new generation, front man who's got a little bit of fire behind him.
Just a bad boy of rock, my dog. I love Ronnie, dude. He rips it, man. He's so talented. So charismatic and got such a wicked, wild story of life and the trauma that dude has survived and persevered and kept the attitude that he's been able to like persevere in his life and stick up for himself and like, you know, clean his life up and shit like that. That's dope, dude. Like, you know, it could have went another way with that dude. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. And so I celebrate where that dude is at in his life and in his career. And I love touring with him. Pushed me so hard because it's like, I got the young hot fire and I'm playing after them, right? I am headlining the show. you know, it was a co-headliner, but it's like,
right, sure, you're on last.
He honored. He was like, I got you, Kobe. Like, you're the OG. I got you. You know, but that dude is blowing up. He's going stratospheric, man. It's exciting. And I love watching that happen. And he deserves it. And yeah, man. And especially what he did with Last Resort. And he did, you got to check out his reimagination.
I will. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, super emotional. Shows another side of Ronnie that is just, it's so cool. And yeah, so that was a great tour for us and really opened us up to all his fans too, man. And they were super receptive of us. We saw a lot of social media popping off, you know what I mean? Like, new fans, new people. And so that's, to me, that's exciting. You know, it's like, I want to tour with that Next Wave, Motionless and White, Bring Me the Horizon. Mm-hmm. I want to tour with Bad Omens. I want to go do something with Beartooth.
Right.
And it's cool because what I found out in those bands, a lot of those bands was repping P. Roach back in the day. They were like one of the first rock bands they knew, or you know what I mean? Like,
right, sure, sure.
God, I played that when I was a kid, you know, shit like that. So it's like, we're kind of having that full circle moment, but we're still in the game, killing it moment.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? Of course.
Woo! It's a good place. It's a good time to be a hero, man. I can't stop with the cowbell. I apologize.
No, man. It's part of the gimmick now. This is it.
Show me the contracts.
Last few things. Ego Trip, you mentioned 4 number one singles. What a huge record for you guys. I mean, do you follow up quickly? Do you wait a bit? I mean, once again, it's a monstrous piece of wax for you.
Yeah, so I'm going to visit my son for a few days, and then right after that, I'm going back in the studio and writing new music. We got 7 songs, 7 pieces of music already in the can. We're not in the can necessarily, but like 4 of them probably could be finished up. 3 of them are already finished. And so we have a good momentum of creativity that we really want to take advantage of. We really, you know, because we're not on the road. So it's good for us to get together and be creative and make music and just keep flexing that muscle. Because I think if we don't, you lose it. And so we're committed to, you know, once every like other month, get together and write music together. And I think that that's going to make for, by the end of this year, shoot, we'll have more than a record. You know, I feel like, is it all going to get released? Maybe some of it we're going to co-write for other artists, you know, and some of it's going to be, maybe we'll try to pitch it for a film or something like that. Or, you know, maybe they're Papa Roach. There are some that are definitely P. Roach in the batch. And then there are definitely some that we're like, oh, this is a bigger vision. And that's exciting in that way. And, just, you know, I love the creative process still. I do. It challenges me. It makes me uncomfortable. Sometimes makes my skin crawl. Makes me want to like just run out of the room. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I know I'm right there. I just need like just give me another moment. Hold on. It's right there. So I'm tapping on it. You know what I'm saying? When you're writing something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
When you're writing, you just feel like it's like, you got to press just a little farther. Sometimes you got to go on a walk, right? And it's like, bing, you know? Yeah. And I love that tension in the creative process, because you want to stay with the momentum of the creative process. And I love that. I love it because it makes for special moments. And then those special moments arise, and me and the band, we're like, now we're on to something. Let's go down that road.
Right.
So I dig that, you know. And the throwaway stuff is the throwaway stuff. It's cool, man. It's all part of the process. So I relate so much of my life to that process.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm trying to be the refined version of myself. And it's like writing a song. It's just my life is a song in a weird, corny, goofy way.
No, that makes sense, though.
Just having trouble trying to trim some of the fat right here. You know what I'm saying?
Last question for you, man. What's your favorite gig? Is there a gig that stood out for you as being the best one? And which one stands out as being your least favorite one?
Well, let's start with least favorite gig. Oh, gosh. Least favorite gig. So we're on stage and it's Rock'em Ring. Rock'em Ring. Tool just went on and we are closing out the stage that night. What is happening? You know, we're the late night band.
Yeah.
So we go up and it's probably midnight and it's just pouring. And we start having power issues. The PA is going down. All right. PA goes back up. We play another song and a half. PA goes down. Crowd starting to get pissed. You know, you can't address the crowd because the PA's down and there's no lights. And I'm just like, it was like the night before we had this pinnacle moment of our career, right, at Rockin' Park, which was insane. And now the next night we're getting rained out and all the power's going out, the crowd's getting pissed. Now they start throwing shit at the stage, lighters, coins, beers. And we're, you know, finally it was just like, what can we do? And it just, they called the show. They were just like, that's it. The promoter's out there with like a megaphone trying to tell the people, and getting pelted with shit. And I'm standing side stage. I'm just like, man. So that sucked. Now, one of the best gigs, dude, and I'd like to promote this one straight up, is Papa Roach Hellfest 2023. It was just something magic in the vibe that day. That was just the crowd. We were just so in with it. It was a great perform. The band performed great. The sonics of the sound recording were like Hellfest, man. They got it dialed in. That mobile nice. Rig that they run, like there's no after recording of this band. When you go watch it, it's a live rock singer, live rock band. You know what I'm saying? Go watch
it. Yeah, yeah.
Tracks with the that shit. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, go watch that shit. Yo, kids, you want to see something? Go check it out. You don't got to run the track. You don't got to sing to your track. You can sing. Go be dope.
Well, dude, this has been dope talking to you and hanging out, man, finally after all these years.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing you on the road somewhere at some point soon, I'm sure.
My man.
Cheers, man. Thanks, dude. Cheers, brother.
Thank you.
Give me a cowbell. One more cowbell.
More cowbell, baby. More cowbell. Woo! Ah, I feel good.
Yeah.